I know Matt and I have been really excited about catching up with you. We messaged you about a month ago.
You've been
and
busy.
We're excited to finally get you in the room to talk about Severance. What a show. What a score. Before we get to Severance, though, Teddy Shapiro joining us here on More Score. I wanted to ask you about the Yellow Jackets story because I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
I was on the Showtime FYC app catching up on some shows that I'm behind on, and it said that you were eligible, and I was like, I didn't know Teddy was a part of that, but I guess you scored the pilot. Can you explain
sure.
how that happened and what the process was? I think it was back in 2019.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, man.
If anybody can remember that long ago. I've collaborated a lot of times with Karin Kusama, who directed the pilot and who was a producer on the show. And so she asked me to work on the show, and I was thrilled. And, you know, I thought that the script for the pilot was amazing and had an amazing time working on the show. It was really exciting. I got to collaborate with Caroline Shaw, who is one of my favorite musicians in the world to work with. And working with her is always just an incredible thrill and privilege. And the pilot, I think, went really well. Unfortunately, just by the time they greenlit the show, I was already on to, you know, it was not a situation where they greenlit the whole series. So by the time they greenlit the show, I was already on to a bunch of other projects, and I just wasn't able to continue. And I don't really love, you know, having my name on something, but farming things out to other writers. That's something that some composers do really well. I find it really difficult. And so I just would rather let somebody else do the work and be properly credited for it than try to.
Can I ask then about that process and handing that kind of over to Craig Wedren and
Craig and Anna? And,
Waronker. I always say that wrong. I know that kind of took over doing the music there. What is the transition like for a project like that? It's a pretty beefy, you know, once this is greenlit, it's a pretty beefy project. Yeah. I assume they want to keep some of the musical elements that are in there, but also maybe start to do a little of their own thing as well. But what's the transition like for something like that? Because there's a lot of creative parts.
Yeah. Well, so fortunately, Craig is one of my closest friends. So right off the bat, that's an easy transition on a personal level, right off the bat. And, I sent Craig, you know, all of the music that I'd written, and then all of the stems of the, Caroline Shaw, had come out, and we did an improvisational pre-record session where she did a bunch of vocals and a bunch of strings. And so I sent all of that to Craig as well, so that they would have the ability to use the material that I had created. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to watch the rest of the show yet, but I've heard some of the stuff from the soundtrack, which is material that I wrote. And so I know they've been using at least some of it. Hopefully the material from the pilot has lived on and had a happy life.
Is that a daunting thing for a composer to come in? I mean, this is almost, I'm asking you the question from the opposite perspective.
From his perspective.
But yeah, when you are taking on something that someone else has kind of got started and you need to catch up and then you need to kind of take over and then grab the wheel and you're driving this. Is that, is that difficult?
I mean, I think it is, unless you, I mean, I think that Craig watched the pilot and he was like, oh, this is great. And I know well what I would like to do with it. You know, and so, and I feel like in situations where I've had a similar experience, you know, that has been the thing that makes it possible. You know, you watch it and you think, oh, okay, I've got a take on this, And then it would be really hard if you came into something and your thought was, well, this is perfect and I just want to do that. That would not be a good
creative thing.
Yeah, it wouldn't be fun. So you know, I think that Craig found his found his lane and went down.
I know I want to get into Severance stuff, Kenny, if you want to jump into a little bit of that. I know you have, it sounds like you might have a little bit of a delay.
Yeah.
What else is new for some reason?
I do. I'm working with a little bit of a delay, so sorry if I step on you guys. Teddy, when we talked to you a couple years ago on Score the Podcast, we talked about your incredible work in comedies, and we talked a little bit about like how in this industry it's easy to get pigeonholed into certain types of genres and stuff. And you've worked with Ben Stiller on a ton of great projects, hilarious stuff in the past. And this particular project, though, Severance, is for me, I saw Ben Stiller was directing. I fired it up and it caught me completely off guard. It was very unique and different, and your music really, really helps tell this story. I'm wondering, first off, how was the project presented to you, and were you surprised at the direction Ben went?
Well, I wasn't at all surprised at the direction that Ben went. You know, I mean, if you watch Escape from Dannemora, which was in his excellent Showtime series, I mean, first of all, just knowing Ben, it's clear that he has a lot of varied interests as a creator, and so. You know, nothing surprises me in terms of where he wants to go and what he wants to do next. You know, Ben contacted me at the end of 2019, and he told me about the show, and it sounded amazing. You know, just instantly such a incredible idea, you know, so clear and simple and immediately understandable and raises so many questions just by hearing the concept alone. So, I mean, I was in instantly and so we, you know, he sent me scripts and we just got into it.
Do you have to demo for him at this stage, or when he calls you, is it like a done deal? He's like, you're my guy.
Yeah.
How's that work? Is there a process of finding it?
I mean, it's not an audition. You know, when he calls and says, you want to do this? No, I mean, we have a lot of history at this point. So no, I don't have to demo for him. But what we did do is just I started writing material and starting coming up with suites and themes and ideas just to start the conversation. And, you know, that led us down a long path of getting to the sound of the show.
There's a question often, Kenny, I want to ask about the music. For this, you came in at script level, basically. We're reviewing at story level, maybe even at some parts. Do the musical conversations start at that level? Do you have the luxury and sometimes the burden, but in this case, probably luxury of avoiding the whole temp music situation? Or is there something still that gets cut in that's kind of, you know, for the editor maybe or something else? How does that kind of work, your music along through the process?
Yeah, so I was very intent on avoiding temp music, and that's something that I like to do whenever possible. So I wrote a large library of music for the show, for the music editor and picture editor to work with, so that we never really had to chase temp music. And then, fortunately, we landed on something that sounded like the show to the point that, I think that there was one time where something that wasn't of the show was cut in and it was just wrong. You know, just like everybody was like, nope, that's not it. It was really a great process for all of us, I think, that the music was really part of the palette of the show from the very, very beginning. It makes a lot of extra work for the composer. But, you know, as it happened, you know, the show was set to go into production, I believe, in April of 2020. So it got shut down by the pandemic. And that opened up this sort of this very long space of time in which I could be just writing themes, talking to Ben, exploring, seeing what worked. Oh, and then, cool. You know, that was the period in which we found the main theme and really started zeroing in on that as the thing that we were going to build from.
There are a lot of directors that almost kind of feel the music at the story level. And there's some that, you know, story first, you know, maybe characters first, music kind of comes secondarily to augment some of those things. I'm curious about kind of the balance that you found in the show, because there's a lot of music minute-wise, you know, in terms of how much you have to create. But I'm curious whether your early talks with Ben had that in mind, or if that's something that maybe, you know, what we find a lot of composers will kind of push for, because it makes this feel a lot more robust.
You know, it's funny. I think that my initial instinct and Ben's was that we would want music to not be in all the time, you know, that we wouldn't want it to just be ever present, but that when it was in, we wanted it to make a statement.
Yeah.
And you know, up until the last episode of the show, that is really how it functions. You know, and then we made this decision about episode 9 that we were going to through compose that episode and make it feel like a single piece of music, or try. And, so that was always the approach. And yeah, there's a decent amount of music in the show. But you know, we're not just underscoring every dialogue scene just so that there's music there. There's a lot of things that play dry.
Yeah, it's not Star Wars or
no, something right, like
that. Yeah.
Right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Kenny, go for it. We'll give you a second to catch up.
With the main theme, I love the decision of, you know, the solo piano. To me, the characters, even though they're kind of in a place together, they always felt very alone and kind of in their own head.
Mm-hmm.
Was solo piano, did that just come right to you? Did you work out bigger orchestral things? And also, I wonder if the pandemic played any role in like the number of instruments you used in the score. Did that affect anything decision wise?
That's an easy one. No, not at all. I mean, we were really just guided by what the sound of the show should be. But you know, we got to solo piano a little bit in a sideways way, which was when I was exploring themes, early on, you know, I was messing around with some electronic stuff, and we were still kind of both of our first thoughts was to explore like the idea of a dichotomy, an innie world and an outie world. And so I was messing around with a lot of electronics, and I had written this suite that it had like a B section. It was like sort of, you know, just like a secondary idea, electronic kind of beat driven. And I flew to New York to meet with Ben in February of 2020. And we were listening to a lot of the material that I had generated from the end of 2019 up until that point, just to sort of talk about it and go over things. And he kept coming back to this B section. And I was like, you know what? This is a good, interesting chord progression. And and he's responding to it in some way. So I should just sort of see if I can expand on that idea. And pretty soon after I got home from New York, I just sat down at the piano and I put my hands on the keys and pretty much just started playing the opening chord progression of the main title, sort of as you hear it in the main title. And it was sort of like my hands told me what to do, where it happened. And I was like, ooh, that's kind of interesting. Like that would be a different approach that would, it's not about the, sci-fi aspect of the show. It's about sort of the mystery of the show and kind of mystery and lonely isolation and alienation. So I took, and then at that point I wrote the melody that goes with it. Felt really good about it. And I sent it to Ben and I was super excited to hear back from him. And then I got nothing for like weeks and weeks. Like, and I was like, oh man, that's a bummer. Cause like, I thought that I was onto something. And then finally, like one day he called, he was like, oh, I just listened to this thing. Like, this is really great. So that was great. So then armed with that, affirmation, I started thinking like, okay, what else can I do with that? And then just began a process of, spinning it out and varying it and doing super simple versions and doing more complicated versions. And that was kind of how it was born. And at a certain point, we started talking about the main title sequence and I took the original 2.5 piece of music that I'd written and turned it into a 1.5-minute version. And that became the music for the main title.
I don't know if I'm necessarily kind of projecting what I know about the story now onto the music, but one of the things that is so cool about the way that the piano plays in this, and especially like you see it right in the opening titles where there's all kinds of orchestration that kind of grows, throughout the opening title, but the piano is just so clear and distanced from all of that. And like, there is a sense of this kind of isolation in what the main melody is there. Did you know going in that that was going to be, kind of a feeling that should be part of this identity?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't know going in. I did not think I gotta get here and go there. It really truly was a thing where I was messing around at the piano and I I guess my intuition just brought me to that idea. And then, but then of course, I credit Ben with having, the excellent intuition that he always has, to identify that as the right sound for the show. I was excited about it, but I'm always grateful to work with him because I trust him so much. And, really his responding to that material was what made it possible.
The other part of this too is the mystery element that you touched on, and kind of finding a little bit more of a musical momentum, I guess, in the mystery. This is a show that unwraps slowly. And so it gives you little information and you give the audience, they kind of have to put two and two together a few times throughout the show. And I always think that, some of the greatest shows in history do that really well. And they allow you to put something together. And there's a real eureka moment that comes from that once you have a realization. Yes. But you also read the script starting out.
Yeah.
So you were maybe at the advantage or disadvantage. This is my question, of knowing where those twists went and when a new piece of information was delivered, how that changed the dynamic. and you read the script very early on. So I'm curious about like some of those little moments where something important happens and, you know, a realization is being communicated. Were you trying to emphasize some of those moments, or kind of what was your, how did you maintain the ability to make those impactful?
Yeah. I mean, there definitely are some twists and revelations that made us want to just ride the line between where we were saying something is happening here, but not tip too much of it. And so, I mean, that was something that we really honestly just had to play around with. And you know, I guess I don't know if we're doing spoilers on this show or not. I mean, the show's been out a long time.
we could do spoil if people can turn it off at this point or skip ahead.
Turn it off now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so like, for example, when it came to the identity of Miss Casey,
yeah.
You know, there are scenes where we see, I mean, the one in particular where we see Adam Scott's character, Mark, passing Miss Casey on the long haul to the break room. And, you know, it's this heightened moment where they're looking at each other and something is happening. And, you know, so what do we do there? I mean, we wanted to heighten it as a moment without people being like, oh, that must be his dead wife. So it took a little massaging and, you know, and just sort of feeling out what felt right and not like too much.
Kenny, I'll let you catch up. Your lag.
I always wait and I have to wait and see. with the music, it's kind of interesting because the show makes you feel uncomfortable, very uncomfortable at times. And one of my favorite uses of music is when you're thrown for a complete loop and the Labor of Love cue, you have this mysterious piano music, and then all of a sudden you're hit with this island vibe kind of, it really makes you feel like, how am I supposed to feel right now? What were your discussions about that music being used at Lumen? And it must have been interesting, the idea being thrown at you. Like, what was that discussion?
You know, it was always part of the idea that there was going to be this late 50s exotica jazz that would be part of the palette of the innies, this sort of very happy sound of the innie world of Lumen. And you know, they had this opening scene but the walk from, you know, from the elevator to MDR for the first time, where he's walking down these long corridors. And I feel like maybe they tried a piece of source music to start with, but it wasn't right. And I was like, I'll take it, you know, and because it was such a fun opportunity, to write something, and you know, and I thought that maybe there was an opportunity to have something thematic for the innie world of Lumen. It was really a great opportunity to get my Mancini on, and you know, and I thought you know, and in particular, an opportunity to write something that had a build within the sequence. You know, the character's just walking down hallways. So the opportunity to really let a theme grow and develop over the course of the walk down the hall was I thought a good opportunity. And then of course, you know, there's so much interesting stuff happening. You know, he's the character as he's walking down the hall, is like, he realizes that he's sniffling and he's got a Kleenex in his pocket and he doesn't know why. And, you know, there's so much interesting stuff that's happening. And, so, you know, it also provided an opportunity to hit certain moments and emphasize beats.
I always just think that this is a perfect example of what music can do to paint the picture, right? Because this space they're walking through, it's not dark, it's not dim. Right. So, but it's creepy. There's nothing on the walls. You could have easily made this feel scary or confusing, and instead it feels happy, but it's also kind of prisony looking, like futuristic. So it really makes you feel uncomfortable because your eyes are seeing one thing. And if I was walking through that hall, I'd be like, where the heck am I? This is weird. But then you hear the music and you're like, oh, maybe I should feel comfortable. It just, that really shows the power of what music can do to, with our eyes and ears, to confuse us a little bit and make us feel weird. I just wanted to emphasize that. Did you ever go to the set?
I did. I mean, not while they were in, I mean, by the time they were in production, it, you know, it was in serious COVID protocol. So going to the set during production was not an option, but I went to when I went to New York in February of 2020, they were building the sets and I was sort of able to see a little bit of what they were up to, but it was still well before they started shooting.
How long is the hallway? I'm just wondering. I mean, it's obviously a lot of camera tricks, but how many halls were there?
I don't know the answer, but like they built a lot, like they built a lot of hallway. I mean, I saw some of the plans for it. It looks like a lot of hallway. So, I mean, I think that throughout the show, you know, I think that Ben's tastes are towards, you know, shooting things, you know, that are real, you know, like all of the computer. I don't know if you've seen this in articles, but like all of the Lumen computers are actually functional. And, you know, so he really likes to do things that way. So I'm guessing that they built a lot of feet of hallway.
One of the things I noticed in the score that it evolves, but I notice like a clock sound, and I'm wondering if that's just my interpretation of the percussion, or were clocks on your mind?
So I mean, there's a lot of ticking, and it's, you know, they're not literal clocks, but you know, I think in part because you know, the show does take its time to reveal things. It definitely needed a sense of propulsion throughout, and just for the viewer to be reminded that that all of these things are sort of headed in one direction, and so, you know, I think that the propulsion, you know, in a lot of episodes, I think really helped to build a sense that the show is kind of building towards something, and maybe helps things feel stitched together and not just, you know, floating or ponderous or a collection of interesting scenes.
The momentum's driving a lot with that score, and it feels like the ticking, the clock, it did something to me that it really helped create more intensity as the show got on.
That's good. I mean, and you know, I'll say that, you know, a key player in all of this is my sound designer, Chris Lane, who he built me a lot of. He built me a lot of like a library of tickers. He built me a library of percussive loops.
That's awesome.
That, and then also, you know, particularly for episode 8 and 9, where things start to get really propulsive, this library of, low percussive loops that could really drive action while sitting under dialogue. And, you know, that became a really critical feature of that music, and really, you know, they were built with episode 9 in mind, but really started to get seeded through the show early on, and you know, a really important part of the musical palette.
You've had a long relationship with Ben, and you've worked in different types of genres, all of these things. I know that his father passed away right yep. around the time that you guys started working on this. And yeah. I was just curious, you know, my dad passed away during the pandemic, and I found myself, and the creative people often get a lot of creative inspiration when something, you know, close to home hits and you kind of need an outlet. And I'm just wondering if this experience working with Ben was different creatively, or, you know, were you having to maybe be there for him a little bit during this process and, yeah. and going, this is a massive undertaking. And I mean, his dad was very much involved in the same industry and all of that. Just how did that affect yeah. this go around with Ben, do you think?
Well, first of all, Kenny, I'm sorry for your loss. That's incredibly hard, and I've been through that.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. So, you know, what I would say is, you know, I think that Ben has, I mean, he's talked about this in interviews, so I'm not revealing anything that he hasn't said publicly before, but you know, he's had a lot of, you know, he's had a lot of lifey things happen to him within the last bunch of years. You know, he had a brush with cancer, and he and his wife, Christine, split up. Although I think that they are back together now. You know, he lost both of his parents in a relatively short amount of time. And I think that there's no question that you know, he's a different person now than he was when we were doing Tropic Thunder. I think he's a kinder person. I think he's a more empathetic person. I think he's much more familiar with loss and his own mortality so I think it affects everything in terms of how he is as a director. And and honestly, you know, I think about, you know, some of our earlier collaborations where, you know, his instincts were really, you know, especially in Tropic Thunder, towards this very maximal approach. And, you know, there seems to be something in his life transition that goes along with his new, you know, his focus on a very minimal approach in this project. So, you know, I think that it's really been amazing. You know, I think that as he has made the transition from being Ben Stiller comedy star to Ben Stiller director, you know, I liked every iteration of Ben, but this is a very warm, kind, and thoughtful iteration of Ben that feels like it doesn't need to be pushing so hard, both creatively and personally. So that's what I've observed.
It's also very interesting to me because Ben has been very excited about this series coming out in a way that, and very kind of vocal about this. And why shouldn't he be? But there are a lot of kind of showrunners and directors that aren't, that are kind of like, that's my thing, I'm moving on to my next thing, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to see somebody who is jazzed up about a series and like not only cared about it, but still cares about, you know, their baby going out to the world.
You know, I'm so happy for him because I don't think that there was no certainty in any of our minds that this show would catch on the way it has. And, you know, I mean, I remember I was on the phone with him like a week before the reviews started coming out, and we were just like, we have no idea. I knew that it was really good. But you know, it could so easily have been just something that, a very small subset of the population got into, and for everybody else, it was just too weird. We had no sense of it. And I think that for, you know, I think Ben felt so gratified to have done this thing that was such a huge undertaking and so daring and so creative, and for have it land for so many people. I think that that was immensely
gratifying. It's such a great show. Really, really.
Well, it is a great show.
It's a rewatchable show.
Like
also,
Breaking Bad didn't. I was going to say things like Breaking Bad didn't catch till like the third or fourth season. So to be able to not only have people latch on, but in season one, it's not an easy thing to do these days because there's so much stuff coming out. So big congrats to you guys. I'm a huge fan, and that cliffhanger ending, if people haven't watched it or haven't caught up yet,
that whole episode,
I can't wait
so
to
great.
Figure out what happens next. And yeah, it was intense, man. I was sweating watching that. But anyway, Teddy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Teddy,
revealing some of the backstories of Severance, and best of luck on future stuff. I don't know if you have anything you want to say you're working on or if you can, but I appreciate
it. I'm just finishing up Paul Feig's new movie, which is called The School for Good and Evil. It will come out on Netflix, I think, in September, if I'm not mistaken. And it's really great. It's this sort of big fantasy movie. And it's a big, big musically. It's a big canvas with a big orchestra and, you know, a kitchen sink approach. And the movie is just like a lot of fun, and Paul is a great director. And so
that's amazing. September. All right.
September.
Very cool.
Teddy Shapiro, thanks for coming on, man. We really appreciate
it. Thank you, Teddy.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It was a pleasure.